Our topic next week is a new centre for the performing arts in Lethbridge. And our speakers will be Suzanne Lint and Christopher Babbitts. I'd also like to remind you that our annual general meeting will be held right here at noon on Thursday, June 21st, and we look forward to your attendance and participation. Ted, if you would. Thank you. Now, in asking your questions, please state your name beforehand. Keep your questions on topic and the preambles as short as you can. Thank you. Ted, you have the floor, sir.
Howard Forsyth. I've followed the war a little in the Globe and Mail. And I have a picture of all of Afghanistan with Kabul up to the north. And that's what the Americans tried to control. And apparently they didn't. Now they've got the Canadians in there helping them. And then down in that province of Kandahar is the city of Kandahar. I'm not sure how big it is. It looked to me like you were reporting some statistics for all of Afghanistan. You were shifting then to Kandahar City. You showed it a time or two. But the Canadian forces are in a base just outside Kandahar, right? And then what they're doing, that's a very small force. And the big statistic, you're talking about $30 million here and 75,000 people there. None of that had to do with the effect of this small Canadian force sitting out there in Kandahar province, not even in the city of Kandahar. How much of you're mixing all three, and the volume got me all mixed up. Can you straighten that out in a minute or so?
Well, I don't know if I can do it in a minute or so, but thank you, Howard, for the question. And I know it is confusing, and I'm sorry if I rushed through those numbers. I was trying to give you a concept of what involvement we have there. We're doing development work throughout the entire country in all 34 provinces. And just to clarify a point, the Americans didn't ask us to go there. The Afghans asked us to go there. It's irrelevant whether or not the United States was there. The United States is still there in much larger numbers than most of us realize. I had no idea that the Americans were that engaged. In other parts of Afghanistan, in the northern parts, they're very heavily involved there. And it's interesting because all we see at night in the media is Iraq. But the Americans are still deeply engaged in the same thing as we're doing, the same thing as the rest of the NATO forces are trying to do, and that's to stabilize the country so we can provide development. And the numbers are all available. We can give you all of the numbers, and if I start spieling them off now, I'll get one mixed up for another. So the important part is that we're investing dollars, but we're investing labor. We have people on the ground. We have non-governmental organizations. We have the Aga Khan Foundation that's very active in many of the provinces. We have Care Canada that's heavily involved. We have Oxfam that's involved. Many of these different organizations that are involved in the development work. CEDA itself has very few boots on the ground, if you will. We have a group that is organizing development projects that most of the labor for these projects are Afghan people. We're providing jobs for the Afghans to help with their own development work. And, you know, we talk about the $1.2 billion that we've committed till 2011. That requires a very close auditing process to make sure that we are effective. So that's why we dole it out in smaller amounts throughout the years. So if we are misdirected in one of our projects, then we don't spend all of our money in one place. It's through microfinance. It's through the irrigation projects. It's through drilling wells. And it's through providing wages for teachers, for doctors and nurses, providing medical equipment. The issue with the province, the rest of the provinces in Kandahar, the military, our Canadian military, is based in the PRT, and there's about 4,500 Canadian military there. They're simply there to provide a safe environment, to be able to secure a safe environment, so our development workers can continue what they're doing.
Yes. My name is Ralph Himsel. Of the money that Canada assigns to its work in Afghanistan, what proportion goes for development and what proportion goes for the military aspect?
I'm here today to talk about the development. You would need to talk to our military parliamentary secretary or minister to have an exact number on what our military is costing. I can't give you that figure. My role is to talk about development, and I don't get involved in the military expenditures. I know what we're spending on development, and I know how important it is, but I also know that securing the environment is important too, and it doesn't come cheap. We realize that.
This has been very interesting. I'm Diane Pointer. My question is, first of all, when we, and I'm using this in the broadest sense, when troops first went into Afghanistan, as I recall, it was to route Osama bin Laden and all his thugs, not to reorganize the country or do anything socially, make social changes. So where are we now with that cause of finding Osama bin Laden and getting rid of him? What's happened there? Is that just been pushed under the carpet, so to speak?
Canada never played a role in that. Canada has provided troops, and the only reason that we've provided troops is because this is a United Nations sanctioned mission of NATO. We're a member of NATO, and we signed on to the Afghan compact that committed Canada to playing a role in development and securing the environment for development. We're not there to wage war. That was never our intent. Our intent was to fulfill a commitment to provide peace and security to Afghan people. And that continues to be our role.
Good afternoon. Stan Knowlton. The past few weeks I've been traveling through some very hostile territory around this area. And I was just wondering if Canada can't take care of a few thousand people, First Nations people within your own constituency, how do they expect to take care of a few million people halfway around the world?
Well, thank you, Stan, for that question. Not on the topic that we were discussing, we realize that we have some very serious issues on our First Nations within Canada. It's unfortunate that those issues haven't been addressed. There's been many, many discussions about it, but no government has seemed to be able to solve those problems. I think we have a minister by the name of Prentice, Jim Prentice, who understands these issues probably better than any other minister of Indian and Northern Affairs that we've had. He's been involved in land claim settlements from the other side. He's worked on a number of land claim settlements in his legal career. He understands the issues. He's in the process now of appointing an independent panel to bring some of these land claim settlements to a close. None of us are proud of the fact that these things have gone on for this long, and I think that this minister is trying to do something about it.
My name is Eric Williams. In Afghanistan, you have some 31 provinces. You indicate that where there is relative passivity, but still the economy is 80% heroin-based or poppy-based. And do we have any plans to change the economy so that poppies are no longer the sole means of support of the people?
Thank you, Eric. 34 provinces, I think, to be accurate. I'm not sure that...
Three of them are at war, aren't they?
Three of them are still in conflict. Yes, they are. I see where you mean the 31. I wish it was so simple. We were just having this discussion, and our MC has a lot of expertise in this field, and I would welcome his comments on this because of his past experiences. Colombia used to be in the same situation where that was the predominant income in Colombia. And through various means, that has changed. We can't walk up to a farmer from Afghanistan and say, we're going to plow up your poppies and you're on your own. The reason that man is growing poppies is to feed his family. He's not getting much money out of it. It's the middleman and the warlords that are making money off the poppies. And however it gets to the users in our countries. It would be unfair of us to walk in and say, you can't grow poppies as of today. We need to find a method of not just alternative crops, but of alternative livelihoods. The suggestion's been thrown out there, why don't we just, instead of spending money on other projects, why don't we just buy all of the opium and put it into legal medications? Well, that sounds great in theory, except for the fact that we have an excessive amount of opium in the legal market already. Turkey provides a lot of that. We have contracts signed with Turkey. So what would happen to Turkey? We would turn Turkey into the new Afghanistan because they would be growing poppies in that country. It's a very difficult issue. Many heads that are smarter than me have not come up with a solution. But we do know that we can't go in, arbitrarily destroy all the crops and think that we're helping these people. It will take time. Colombia is an example. We thought we'd never bring it under control in Colombia. We have. It takes a tremendous amount of effort on behalf of a lot of countries to make this change. Water is a big part of it. The more irrigation we can provide, the more water that we can get onto the fields, they can grow alternative crops. The crop rotation there, I was quite surprised. One year it's opium, the next year it's marijuana. I didn't realize it was such a big marijuana crop until I met with some of the locals. So it is an issue, and perhaps you have a solution at hand that you would like to share with us?
Well, I'm not going to give you a solution, but I am going to emphasize the problem. This year, according to the UN report on drugs, which was out about 3 weeks ago, is opium production in Afghanistan is up 60%. Now, as Ted says, it's a very, very difficult problem. And I would challenge that it's been licked in Colombia. But unless one is able to come up with an alternative source of income for farmers to give them a crop which will give them as much income as growing poppies, or we work out deals which mean that, as Ted says, you can't just cut turkey off. There are contracts, there are arrangements. But so it's a very complex business, but we ain't winning it yet. Production's up. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
I'm Bev Mendel-Atherstone. Thank you very much, Member of Parliament Ted Menzies. It's lovely to have our MPs come and report back to us and tell us what they're doing. I have two questions, and actually they're quite related to the last one. I too feel that in this very arid region that you've showed us so explicitly on your photos, that we should be doing something to buy the poppies from the farmers. Canada is one of the greatest, and we have our medical doctor right here, Dr. Eric Williams, will tell us one of the greatest per capita users of the of opiates, and we have an aging population worldwide. So it seems to me that we are going to be using more and more opiates. Why not buy up these poppy crops and encourage our own pharmaceutical industries here in Canada? Seems like it would be a win-win situation, and we could stockpile it. My second question relates directly to the poppies, and that is, you mentioned many, many times. Can you be quiet, please? Thank you. Thanks, Rob. The second question relates to Parliament. I was at the NDP conference in Quebec City in the fall, and there the youngest member of the Afghan Parliament, female member, mentioned the names of the warlords who sit currently in the Afghan Parliament. You mentioned many times you were there directly at the behest of Afghanistan and of the democratically elected Parliament. When you have a situation when warlords are in the Parliament and the illegal production of poppies is bolstering their economy, I'm very concerned about the fact that we call this democratically elected, especially in a country where women can only go to the polls if they're allowed to by their husbands, or they are accompanied by male members and they're told how to vote anyway. So my question is about how to enhance democracy in Afghanistan with all these tremendous cultural, economic, and warlord situations. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Thanks, Beb. Going back, first of all, to the issue with poppies and opium, as I've said, there's people have been arguing that it would be as simple as just buying the crop. It's not that simple. There's a lot of knowledgeable people that would suggest all it would do is encourage more production. If there's an outlet for it, it would encourage it. And, you know, whether we've been successful in Colombia or not is debatable, but it's not as bad as it was. We have hope. As I mentioned, they're growing other crops other than just poppies now. They're able to grow other crops. We'd be better to engage in buying some of their legal crops, distributing them around the country. Their transportation system is almost nil, but perhaps we'd be better to engage on the legal trade of commodities that they can grow as an alternative and pay them to grow that rather than pay them to grow an illegal crop. It's a shift in mindset. If we pay them for growing an illegal crop, what message is that sending for the future? And as I say, there's already an excess. I'm hoping that you're talking about seniors using this in legal means, not an illegal means. And we wouldn't entertain otherwise. But there is, if you talk to experts involved in this, ones that have been involved in Colombia, for example, there is an excessive amount of opiate available on the markets. Talking about enhancing democracy, I'm not saying that that regime is perfect. By no means. I had a meeting with the minister responsible for women's issues, I think is the title. And she was very glowing in her comments about what Canada has been involved in. Minister Vernier is very focused on women's issues. So she's made sure that a lot of the funding that we've provided and that other NATO donors have provided goes to improving the women's lot in life. They can go out. We saw women walking the street without a man. So it is changing. Whether it's a true democracy or not, time will tell. But it's better than what we had 5 years ago. It's better than the rule under the Taliban where there was no votes. And all of these members of parliament were, if you use the term, democratically elected. There was probably some things that wouldn't happen in this country, but it was also their first election. And if we don't stay and support them, if we don't promote democracy, and if we don't promote the rule of law in that country, then all that we've invested, the lives that we've invested, would be for naught.
My name is James Moore. Thanks very much for coming, Ted. It's great to have our MPs coming out and addressing us. I just sort of have a follow-up question on democracy and women in Afghanistan. It's nice to see, I mean, you use the words truth and freedom, and you spoke to oppression of women in your presentation, which is really good. There's a woman, I think, that Bev was alluding to, who spoke to the Canadian Parliament. Her name is Malalai Joya. This week, she's been suspended from the Afghan Parliament, and she's been suspended for the crime of criticizing other elected parliamentarians. Now, Ted, I think that you'd agree with me, if we had such a law in Canada, we wouldn't have a sitting parliamentarian.
I might be out myself.
I think this is something that, in view of what you've been saying in your speech, you might want to, stand up in the House and make some statement that she should be reinstated, or, the right of a courageous woman to be outspoken in Afghanistan, and especially in the Afghan Parliament, is something that Canada is in favor of, and that's why we're there. It'd be really good to bring that forward there, I think.
Well, thank you, James. And I will share with you that not only happens in Afghanistan. This spring, we had a member of the Liberal caucus kicked out of caucus because he wasn't going to vote the party line. So it not only happens in Afghanistan, it happens right in this country. Joe Camuzzi, a very well-respected member of parliament that represents his constituents, was kicked out of the Liberal caucus because he thought there was some good things in our budget. So I'm not making excuses. I'm just pointing out that the democracy isn't perfect even after all these years. I have met this lady. I met her when she was in Ottawa, and had probably a 20-minute conversation with her. She had some very good points to make. President Karzai, in his address to the House of Commons, talked about criticism. And he said there isn't one paper in Afghanistan that supports some of his decisions. So he has critics, and very strong critics. I don't know the details why this lady was kicked out of government or kicked out of caucus, I'm not just sure which, I would like to find out, and I will pursue that. I hadn't heard that news yet, so thank you for bringing that to my attention. I think we have time for about one more, and then I do need to run. I have another commitment.
Hello, I'm Sheila Rogers. I was watching a clip from CBC's The National this morning on the computer, and it was a report by a reporter named Brian Stewart, and he was talking about the suspected Taliban detainees and the fact that there is not much transparency about how many of these detainees the Canadian government has turned over to the Afghan security forces, and also that they haven't released names. Now, even the U.S. has released the numbers and names of the prisoners that are in Guantanamo Bay. And I'd like to know why the Canadian government won't release the numbers of detainees they've handed over or their names, because I feel that this makes their position very vulnerable.
Let me make sure that people here do not draw any connection between Afghanistan and Guantanamo Bay. There is no correlation between those two, so I think it's an unfair comparison. We have an agreement in place, which wasn't there before. The former government sent our troops to Afghanistan with no plan in place, no agreement in place for transfer.